This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 4th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And we got word about our old friend Aaron Boone yesterday that he had surgery to get a pacemaker. He had going through some tests, and he said in his statement that he's had mild symptoms of lightheadedness, low energy, and shortness of breath over the last 6 to 8 weeks. I texted him yesterday afternoon, and he texted back, "I'm about ready to go in, you know, feeling good." And I exchanged texts again with him this morning, and it seems like he absolutely is feeling better. It doesn't sound like he's going to be gone for very long from the Yankees dugout with so many advances in heart treatment. And Boone knows more about that than anybody because, of course, he had open heart surgery a little bit more than a decade ago. Yankees general manager Brian Cashman talked about how Aaron Boone told him about the procedure.
When he first told me a number of days ago what was going on, that, hey, with today's science, which is so incredibly impressive, that, you know, this is an outpatient situation and you can be up and running within 24 to 48 hours and back to normal. And, you know, just the way he communicated with me, put me at ease that, you know, if he's good, you know, I felt my takeaway was if he's really in a good place, then I'm in a good place. And, you know, cause all I care about is him.
Here's Yankees pitcher Corey Kluber.
Yeah. I think obviously, you know, nobody ever wants to hear anything like that. Boone, you know, made a video kind of reassuring everybody that he felt confident in, you know, the procedure and felt confident he was going to bounce back from it. And obviously that's reassuring to hear. Obviously anytime you hear about a heart issue or anything like that, it's pretty alarming. So I think, you know, to hear from him that he was confident in it, I think that probably puts everybody a little bit more at ease.
Jeff Passan reports that Major League Baseball will hold a sport-wide Lou Gehrig Day starting this season, honoring the Hall of Fame New York Yankees first baseman whose grace and courage fighting ALS inspired a group of those affected by the disease. This is an effort to make June 2nd synonymous with the Yankee Hall of Famer. The plans, which were revealed to ESPN and which will be announced by Major League Baseball on Thursday morning, include an annual tribute in which uniformed personnel wear a jersey patch celebrating Gehrig and a 4ALS logo commemorating his number 4 that'll be displayed around stadiums. We'll be talking with Jesse Rogers about this coming up. Our exhibition broadcast continued yesterday. Jason Benetti, Jessica Mendoza were talking with Mariners manager Scott Service when Jared Kelnick came to the plate.
For a long time before I got this job, the players will let you know when they're ready. They really will. And that's just not the physical part of the game. Go, keep going. That way.
And it's called. Kelnick.
Sorry, it's
takes it up and out.
Good day to hit here over in Mesa. The ball is carrying. Good for him.
What do you see on that swing? I know you're busy talking to us and answering our questions. So.
Oh, wait, Jay. Hi, babe. Wait, Marvel. I'm going to stay on mic all the time. We do a little bit better here when we're scoring a few runs.
Done. Nice.
It seems like that anybody who's on microphone when Jared Kelnick is at the plate is probably going to have good things happen in the background. Shohei Ohtani continues to look great in spring.
Shohei Ohtani will bat for the third time today. He's had a walk and a ground out. Full count. We'll see what gives again on Shohei. There goes Adele again, and Shohei blasts the ball into dead center field. That one's out by the batter's eye, and it clears the batter's eye. A home run and a bomb there by Shohei Ohtani.
I tell you what, Shohei Ohtani, and what I've seen of exhibition play this spring, he just looks physically stronger. Like, his legs look stronger. His body looks stronger. He looks like he's poised to have a monster year at the plate, especially with how comfortable he looks swinging this spring. And he seems like he's in an absolute mission to make this thing work for him as a two-way player. Wander Franco is considered to be the best prospect in baseball. This is what he did yesterday.
So here he is, the number one prospect in baseball. And he swings, sending a high shot into deep right, and he got all of that one. Wow. What a shot on the first pitch. And Wander Franco puts the Rays out in front.
Dwayne Statz on the Rays television network. John Lester, the veteran Nationals left-hander, will undergo thyroid gland removal surgery, and he'll be out for about 5 to 7 days. That, according to manager Dave Martinez. Indians president Chris Antonetti joined manager Terry Francona for the Indians Zoom availability from training camp in Arizona a day after a story by The Athletic said several former Indians employees had come forward in the last month to say the team's front office was aware of Callaway's behavior. The unidentified employees responded to Antonetti's public comments on February 4th that he didn't know about Callaway's actions until he read a previous Athletic story. Antonetti indicated to reporters yesterday he really can't comment on what's going on or what happened in the past with Mickey Callaway because there's an ongoing investigation by Major League Baseball. Veteran lefty Gio Gonzalez, one of the great guys in baseball, agreed to a minor league deal with the Marlins. Gio, of course, grew up in Miami. News broke overnight. Jackie Bradley Jr. agreed to a two-year, $24 million deal with the Brewers. Got a lot of talk coming up in this podcast about that deal with Jesse Rogers and with Sarah Langs. And Joe Altobelli, who managed the Orioles to the 1983 World Series title, passed away yesterday at age 88. Now, before we get to Jesse and to Sarah, and Lynn Worthy of the Kansas City Star to move us along in a preview of the American League Central, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And don't forget, check out Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, weekdays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. And listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. Yes, that is happy birthday playing at Wrigley Field because Jesse's birthday is today. Jesse, happy birthday.
Thank you, Buster. Thank you. You know, this is the first birthday I'm actually at my home in Chicago in, what, 7 or 8 years, maybe 9 years, because usually I'm in spring training. I was in Florida. I'm planning on Arizona next week, but I got a week in between to be home with my family for my birthday, so I'm excited about that.
All right. Well, you know, I can hear the joy in your voice, and I'm sure that there is joy in the voice of Jackie Bradley Jr. this morning. The premier free agents still on the board, reaches an agreement with the Milwaukee Brewers, 2 years and $24 million. And I really wondered, Jesse, if in, you know, like 3 months or 4 months, especially at a time when it's beginning to feel like, you know, circumstances are loosening up, we're going to have some fans in the stands, there's going to be more revenue for teams than maybe they anticipated in those dark days of December and January. If there are going to be some teams that'll look back and say, boy, I wish that we had taken advantage of that soft free agent market and gotten a really good veteran player who's in the middle of his career and whose primary skill of defense is something that shows up every day. I like this signing for the Brewers.
Oh, I think Milwaukee is one of these teams that kind of quietly gets the job done every year and somehow competes with that lower payroll in the small market. I think Craig Counsell is one of the most underrated managers, and he does well with whoever Stearns plugs in there, and they spend very specifically and targeted. I mean, this one sort of came out of nowhere, but yeah, I mean, in sort of a weak division, really helps them. I think teams have done a great job at and unfortunately for the relievers, you know, they've done a great job at getting deals, nice team friendly deals on relievers. I mean, how many relievers are on minor league invites? They make the team, okay, they may make a good buck. But I think they have passed up on some of these guys. And Jackie Bradley Jr. is a good example. High character guy. I think that locker room is a high character locker room. I think that's a sneaky team in the division. I'm not sure I love everything they're doing on the mound, but you can't be perfect at every position. So, yeah, what a late signing that is. Kind of replaces, you know, Ryan Braun in a sense. I mean, that's almost like a brand new outfield because Yelich was not Yelich last year, right? Kane had opted out. Now you have Garcia as a holdover. So you get back to the Yelich of old, Kane back, and now you add a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr. All of a sudden, Milwaukee looks a little bit different in that division.
Yeah, and the book Moneyball, you know, it's so funny. A lot of people in baseball, when it first came out, were like, yeah, we already knew about on-base percentage. So, you know, that a lot of people, that was the perception of the book. The book was about exploiting market inefficiencies. And you do wonder if Milwaukee, you know, saw the slow free agent market, saw some of the development, maybe also factored in the fact that the baseball is going to be different this year. And there may be more balls put in play that don't actually clear the ballpark. And said, you know what, market inefficiency, we're going to take advantage of his defense because not only do you get Jackie Bradley Jr., but you also get Colton Wong on a two-year deal. And Paul Imbecchini sent me a note this morning, you know, over the next 2 years, they're spending $42 million for these two players who are among the best defenders in baseball at their respective positions. And the Brewers have been really bad defensively. You know, last year they were minus nine defensive runs saved. That was 22nd. 69% defensive efficiency, that's 21st. And now with those two guys providing the backbone of their defense up the middle at second base and center field, it could be a really good defensive team.
Yeah, and you're right. They needed it. I watched them up close for years. They haven't been a great defensive team by any stretch, and they are certainly better. I mean, I was at St. Louis Cardinals camp last week, and I was picturing Arenado at third and Colton Wong at second. What an infield that would have been. But they traded one Gold Glover, you know, for another Gold Glover. But keeping them both would have been great. But that's this, you know, is Milwaukee's benefit now, getting both those guys. You know, the market inefficiency thing is interesting, too. I always look at teams. The teams that jump the market, you know, I think are trying to get a gem maybe before the market is set, like the teams that do things like early November. And then it's the teams that wait. And grab someone late because, you know, maybe that free agent is getting a little nervous and other spots are filled elsewhere. Like, there's two ways of thinking of it. And I feel like Milwaukee's in that second category. I'd have to look back. Maybe it's just my perception. I feel like they act much later than a lot of other teams. Like, Atlanta acts early. But I feel like Milwaukee acts late and takes advantage of the situation in that moment. So I think we'll find out a little bit more about Jackie Bradley Jr., the other offers and things. Maybe getting the one-year opt-out was beneficial for him. He really wanted it. Well, those details will emerge, but it certainly is Milwaukee's benefit. Much better defensively than just a year ago. And with Kane back as well. I mean, that's incredible what they've added defensively.
Right. And you would assume, and we haven't heard from the Brewers exactly what their plans are, but you would assume that Kane is going to slide to a corner with Jackie Bradley Jr. being probably the defender at this stage in his career and Kane at his age that he's at now. And what the Brewers do, what the Cardinals do, is going to have a direct bearing on the Chicago Cubs and their choices during the course of the year. You and I have both written about this. I heard you on the game broadcast yesterday talking about this. I think the Cubs are absolutely poised for a massive, massive sell-off in the middle of the 2021 season.
100% agree. And I think Cub fans just don't want to hear it, but they really do want to hear it, you know, because they have short memories. The last 3 years have been a debacle at the end of the season offensively for this team. And they're no better than they have been, yet the Padres are better. The Dodgers are just as good. The Mets are better. The whole NL East is better. The Cardinals are better. I don't see why, if you're a Cub fan, you don't want them in the race in mid-July. I know every season is sacred, quoting Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, but this is 1 year, and Jed said it on the broadcast 2 days ago, on his own broadcast. This is a transition year. What GM says that if you have World Series aspirations? So, Cub fans, you don't want Jed Hoyer, three games out of first place on July 30th, to be standing pat or even buying, because come the end of that year, 15 free agents might walk out the door. Now, you might sign a couple back, but you don't have a foundation for a team or a farm system if you allow that to happen. I agree with you, and this is why yesterday in my article, it was kind of dubbed the Cubs could be doing what the White Sox did in 1997, which is a white flag trade. Even if they're close to first place, he's got to err on the side of selling. Most of the time, you don't do that. Most of the time, you don't do that, Buster. This is 1 year where he needs to think about it that way.
And I would say this, too, and that sell-off that you referenced in that article, it happened right at the trade deadline, basically. I think the Cubs are going to be making their assessment like in early to mid-June. Like, I would not at all be surprised, because of the sheer volume of players and the amount of work that would be required to put into preparing for trades, if the Cubs effectively jump the market. And when we get into, you know, if the Cubs are, say, 6, 7, 8 games out of first place, they're not playing very well, they don't look like they have a lot of hope, I wouldn't at all be surprised if they kind of handle it the way, you remember the year the Yankees traded Aroldis Chapman and Andrew Miller, they were out there early. Like, the Yankees are like, we are going to push this early to make sure that we get the deals we want. And here's the other thing, too, that I think the Cubs front office needs to be aware of, and probably is, if, in fact, we wind up with a 10-team playoff field for 2021, there could be a huge, huge number of sellers. Like, it could be an unbelievable buyer's market by the time we get to July 25th, July 28th, July 30th, because there could be a lot of teams waving the white flag at that point. That's why I feel like we need to really begin to look at the Cubs as potential sellers as June starts, where they become, along with the Giants, as maybe two sources of a lot of these veteran players who can help contenders.
Yeah, all of this is fascinating. I think it's a great observation. But think about this. How about the fact that the minor league season is starting in May? You didn't have a minor league season last year. If you are selling, you better have your scouting, you know, system in place, right? Now what do you have maybe a month or two to scout minor league players that didn't even play last year? This is a difficult thing to navigate if you are Jed Hoyer or any other stated seller. Early June might be an assessment for the team, but you may want to wait until you see some more minor league play to pull that trigger, you know, in July or whatnot. But I don't disagree with your theory at all. The Cubs would have to be in first place by like 5 games for him not to think about it that way. But man, he's setting himself up for a weird season with the fans, because Jack Peterson's pretty good, you know, and Jake Arrieta might find the fountain of youth. My point is, they probably won't be 8 or 9 games back. You know, it's not like St. Louis and Milwaukee or San Diego and the Dodgers. So he's just going to have to really articulate the message if they're sellers, despite being 4 or 5 out. But maybe they will be 8 or 9. Who knows?
And one way they can navigate around the lack of information in the minor leaguers is to use the players to be named. You know, one of the deals this winter, that 3-team deal that the Red Sox were involved in which Andrew Benintendi went to the Royals, the Red Sox had 3 players in that deal who are players to be named, and their internal thinking was, you know what, let's just wait to identify those players. Let's go and see some games in spring. Let's go and see some games during the course of the year, and it bought them some time. And maybe that's something that Jed Hoyer will think about, you know, once they're selling off these guys. And by the way, in what will probably become a buyer's market, it's not like they're going to get huge return on a Jock Peterson or an Arrieta, or quite frankly, for, you know, a Chris Bryant or a Javier Baez, because all these guys are eligible for free agency when the year's over. So definitely, you know, a team that I think we're going to be watching and talking a lot about during the course of the year. You just got done with a swing through Florida. You saw some National League East teams. What jumped out at you?
It's going to be really competitive, and I don't know who the winner is. I mean, let's start with that. It's not like every team is perfect. Each team has its flaws. I do think, you know, there's a little – oh, if you're looking for an opening with the Braves, you could find one, right? Two-thirds of their outfield is new, and you're sending Ozuna back out there. That's always a mystery what he's going to do out in left. You're probably going with a rookie, Christian Pache, in center. Soroka's still coming back on the mound. You know, hopefully Morton is still Morton, but Austin Riley at third. Like, is there a little, you know, opening there with Atlanta? Maybe. I love what Dombrowski did in the bullpen. Absolutely love what Dombrowski did. And what stood out to me going to Phillies camp, and this is just the second time I've ever been around this situation, the hiring of an executive changed the culture, changed the vibe there. I saw it with the Cubs and Theo Epstein, and I saw it up close there just in a day or two with the Phillies with Dave Dombrowski. You don't usually see it that or hear it that way, right? Yeah, we signed Bryce Harper, changes the culture. Well, that started it. Joe Girardi kind of got that. But then when Dave Dombrowski comes on board, that is a proven winner at multiple places. And, you know, you think about it, and just talking to Bryce Harper as I did, you know, he's not going to throw Gabe Kapler or the Matt Clentock under the bus. But those were like rookie GM, rookie manager. What do the Phillies do? They go to a veteran manager, a veteran GM to run this thing, president of baseball operations. I love what he did in the bullpen. Tony Watson from the left side. I think Brandon Kinsler is one of the most underrated pitchers in the game. And Archie Bradley, those three alone will change the dynamic. So don't sleep on Philly. We know how good the Mets are going to be. I was there for Lindor's first day. Great vibe there, just among the team with him there. And the Marlins made the playoffs last year. They have great young pitching. So it's like you could find flaws with each team, but there's so many strengths as well. It really is about which of those teams comes together. Like every year is different. I think it's going to be about that chemistry, that camaraderie. Which of those NL East teams comes together, overcomes a few holes within their roster to emerge? And I don't have that answer today, Buster. Do you?
I think the Braves are incredibly underrated. I think the Braves have there's a lot of strength in mortar in that team, and the fact that they could get Ozuna on that team friendly a deal for them, I think they are, you know, absolutely going to be the team to beat as we go through this. So we got less than 2 minutes, and I got two more for you. One, there's a report about the possibility of expanded playoffs in 2021 being dead, but I kind of chuckled at the way that it was. The way that it's been cast is that it essentially was, the playoffs, expanded playoffs in 21 are dead for now. What does that mean? You know, I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to talk again, but everybody I talked to said the phone lines are open. And so we'll see if they actually do wind up talking. But yeah, it's dead in 2021 for now.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard this all offseason, and right. until recently, I thought it was still alive, and then recently, I thought, you know, we're getting past the point of no return, even though we're really not. I've heard no momentum towards it at all, right? At least there were conversations. I've heard no momentum towards it, so maybe that's the basis of that report. I don't think so, because both parties are kind of like, you know, the players are not going to trade the DH for the expanded postseason, and they're not going to just give them the expanded postseason. That's the biggest chip they have in some ways coming up next December, right? This December in the CBA negotiations. So I don't know how the impasse gets overcome. I don't know how they overcome that impasse, whether it be the DH or expanded playoffs. So I'm kind of leaning towards it is dead, but maybe I'll be wrong. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Man, we saw last year they worked very quickly. And lastly, Jeff Passan with a story this morning that baseball will honor Lou Gehrig on June 2nd. This is a great thing, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things you didn't think about until it comes up like this. And you're like, yes, that makes complete sense. Absolutely. I don't know what else to say. I think it's a slam dunk now that I've heard it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that was on my mind, but once you read the story, you're like, yeah, I you could absolutely get your arms around this. what is a debilitating, terrible disease, and named after a baseball player. So why not bring some shine some light on it in the middle of the baseball season? Maybe make some money for the cause. Absolutely.
All right, Jesse. Great to talk with you. Happy birthday. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. I will. It was a great start to it. Take care.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
And Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer of MLB.com. And Sarah, we get the news this morning. Jackie Bradley Jr. Signs a two-year deal with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I was talking with Jesse Rogers about how it really does feel like that the Brewers have identified a market inefficiency. They get two of the best defenders, up the middle defenders, in Colton Wong and Jackie Bradley Jr. on 2-year contracts, $42 million. Right in the prime of their careers. It doesn't feel like there's any risk for the Brewers here.
Absolutely not. I mean, I think you really know what you're getting with each of them. I don't think you're signing them for really an offensive bonus. I think with Jackie Bradley Jr., there's probably some still lingering, you know, hopes that came when he first came up that maybe he could break out a little bit more offensively, but it really doesn't matter because he is such a good defender. And they really struggled defensively in the outfield last year, especially in center field, mostly after Lorenzo Cain opted out. But adding a plus defender there is just a really great thing for them. And infield, I mean, they were fine, but adding someone like Colton Wong just puts them on a whole other level. So I love that these two biggest additions for them were both defensive positives. They both had positive outs above average last year. And I think that more teams need to really be valuing that kind of run prevention.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 43. So that's how many home runs Ronald Acuna Jr. is projected to have per Zips by Dan Zimborski this season. That's projected to lead the majors. So he's projected to have more home runs than anybody else. The last Braves player to lead the majors in home runs was Andrew Jones in 2005. And if Acuna were to hit 43 home runs this year, that would give him 124 career home runs before turning 24, so by the end of this season, before his 24th birthday next year. That would be seventh most all-time before turning 24, even with the fact that there was a shortened 2020 season when we know he would have hit more home runs if there were more than 60 games. So he'd only be behind Mel Ott, Eddie Matthews, Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Trout, Frank Robinson, and Alex Rodriguez, all Hall of Fame careers or legitimate Hall of Famers. And, you know, sometimes it feels like we don't talk enough about his power. I'm giving him 43 home runs he hasn't hit yet, but everyone's expecting him to have a really big year offensively.
Number two
is 60. So we got news yesterday that Framber Valdez has a fractured finger. We don't know exactly how long he's going to be out. It was suffered when a comebacker was hit to him in his start 2 days ago. But he led the majors last year with 60 strikeouts on his curveball. His curveball had an average spin rate of 2,982 RPM, also led the majors. And he led the Astros with 70 and two-thirds innings pitched. And again, we don't know exactly how long he's going to be out, but any pause to the ramp-up for him, I think, is really troubling news for the Astros, who are going to be relying on him heavily. He was, you know, by most counts, their most reliable and best pitcher last year. And a lot of people are picking him as sort of a dark horse Cy Young candidate. So we'll see exactly what the timeline is here and how this might affect it.
Number one is one.
So Kyle Schwarber and Josh Bell each hit their first home run in a Nationals uniform. Yes, in spring training, but still yesterday. So that's what the one is for. And Zips, again, is projecting Juan Soto for 37 home runs this year, Schwarber for 33, Josh Bell for 27, and Trey Turner for 26. So the most 25 home run hitters that the Nationals or Expos franchise has had in a single season is three. In 2017, Bryce Harper, Anthony Rendon, and Ryan Zimmerman. And in 2012, Ian Desmond, Adam LaRoche, and Ryan Zimmerman. And again, we've seen other offenses have a ton of 30 home run hitters. The Twins did it when they set the record in 2019. But we haven't seen this offense from this team. And I think that we have a lot of respect for that rotation. We know what they can do, although they are getting older. Max Scherzer is going to turn 37 this year. And John Lester is already 37, so he's already up there. But the offense is going to be really good.
Yeah, and when I talk to other teams about the Nationals, something I hear all the time is, you know, they have enormous respect for the rotation, which generates a lot of strikeouts. They have enormous respect for Mike Rizzo, their general manager. They know that he's really good at making trades in season. You know, they have individual stars. Juan Soto, I think, is, you know, for me, is an easy pick to win the MVP in the National League. But everybody comes back to, wow, that defense could be really bad. What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was the first thing that I looked into when Schwarber signed with the Nationals was, all right, there's no DH, so this means he's going to be playing left field. And he's one of the five worst defenders in the outfield, not even by the specific position, since outs above average began in 2017. If you go to defensive runs saved and go to whatever span of his career you want, it's the same story. And, you know, I think I've already heard in spring, they've talked about it. They made reference to it in his introductory press conference. They're excited for him to play left field, but, you know, we'll see what that actually looks like. And Josh Bell also is not particularly notable defensively. And we don't know exactly what Juan Soto is going to do in right field. It is his natural position. It's the position he played until he came up when Bryce Harper was obviously occupying right field, but a lot of defensive question marks. But as you said, great pitching, great offense. You do need all three, though. We know the Brewers are working on that third part, so we'll see.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Buster.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Lynn Worthy covers the Kansas City Royals for the Kansas City Star. And Lynn, look, we talked a lot about the White Sox this winter. We naturally had conversations about the Indians because they traded Francisco Lindor. You always know the Minnesota Twins are going to make moves. But the Royals were aggressive within the Royals context, yes?
Yes. They did not sit and wait. And I think, you know, Dayton Moore and players on the team the last couple of years have sort of wanted to get away from that phrase rebuilding. They didn't like the word. They didn't want to use it. And I think this year with the offseason moves, they have, you know, actually physically, you know, with their actions, gotten out of that mode, you know, by adding Carlos Santana, by adding Mike Minor, by adding Andrew Benintendi in that three-team trade. They've actually, you know, bolstered their lineup, and they actually have more of a set lineup compared to previous seasons where there was a lot of guys who you were just still trying to figure out where they were, and they're getting their footing under them as major leaguers.
If you were to identify like one part of the team that you feel like is, you know, potentially a pivot point between them being, you know, a team that's completely out of contention to a team that maybe flirts with contention, what part of the team would it be?
It's going to sound like, you know, the answer that anybody could give, but I say pitching, especially because they've got a lot of talented young pitchers, but there's still a lot of guys who haven't been proven yet. I mean, you look at last year, Brady Singer won their top draft pick from 2018, Chris Bubich, another draft pick from 2018. They both debuted last year, but they only had that short season of major league experience without fans in the stands. And how that extends over 162 games is going to be crucial to their success this year. Even a guy like Brad Keller, who's been around a couple of years, but he's only a year older than some of those guys. He's had really just one full season as a major league starter. He had a season where he came out of the bullpen and then moved to the starting rotation late in the season. Last year was obviously the shortened season, and he had COVID, so that was even shortened more for him. But he looks like a potential workhorse and an ace. But again, he's a guy who hasn't had extended experience in the major leagues. And then you've got, you know, talented prospects like Daniel Lynch, who's viewed as one of the top prospects, pitching prospects in baseball, and he hasn't pitched in the majors yet. So between just the talent that they think is there and the fact that they haven't done it over 162 games, or some of them haven't been, you know, done it in the major leagues at all yet, I think that how that plays out decides where they're at when the season ends.
When they signed Carlos Santana, I know that there were people with other teams who were surprised how much money he got, you know, coming off, you know, what, which something wasn't a great performance for him in 2020 in a 60 game season. I feel like he's the perfect player at the perfect time because the elements that he brings to the offense. What do you think?
Yeah, he fits exactly what they said they were going to target in terms of on base percentage, a guy who's got power and who's consistent at bat. I think as a team, the last 2 years, I mean, between the last full season and the shortened season, the Royals have been the bottom, I want to say 20, or they've been, you know, no higher than like 25th or something like that in on-base percentage as a team, the last 2019, 2020. That was something they talked about. They needed guys who were going to get on base, who were going to have more consistent at-bats. You add that in Santana, who I think for his career is around 350 on-base percentage. Who's, you know, in 2019 was an all-star silver slugger, you know, who's hit 30 home runs, lengthens out a lineup that they've had issues with. I mean, the last couple of years, that 7-8-9 in their lineup has been just really, it's been sort of just drops off a cliff. And so now you lengthen that out with a guy like him and, you know, push some other guys down. So he definitely fits that. And, you know, as far as 2020, I think the Royals, I don't know if they've actually come out and said it, but I think if you look at their moves, I think you say 2020, they're really throwing that out for a bunch of guys, which, you know, maybe it's a roll of the dice. But I mean, if you think about Benintendi, you think about Santana, even Minor to a certain extent, I think all of them had their issues in 2020 with the shortened season. But the Royals seem to believe more in what they've seen in the track record leading up to that. And they're sort of more or less, you know, throwing out 2020 when they make that evaluation.
So Andrew Benintendi is a really interesting player to me. I remember writing a story about him when, you know, not long after he was drafted and asking scouts, okay, what do you see in this guy? Because he's, as you know, he's not very big. Like he's not someone who's like 6'5 and weighs 240. And the feedback that I got was after he was drafted was, this is someone who has a natural loft in his swing. He has an ability to get the ball in the air. And yet at the start of 2019, after they win the World Series and he contributed so well defensively in 2018, he showed up. I remember seeing him. He was huge. Like he went and lifted weights and got really strong, almost like an effort to get the ball in the air, which theoretically was already a strength of his. And his bat slowed down. He didn't do as well. He got off to a bad start in 2020. And I know that there were folks in the Red Sox organization who went to see him this winter, as he was going through his winter work, and they were coming back saying, like, he looks like he's back. He looks like he's back to where he was with the progression in 2018. Based on your conversations with Royals people, what do they think they're getting in Benintendi now at this stage in his career?
They think they're getting more of the guy that we saw in 2017 and 2018. And just what you said was sort of my first thought when, you know, that trade went down is, where is he at with that? Because, I mean, I grew up in New England, so I still follow a lot of stuff. So I heard a lot of the things about Benintendi and whether or not he was a launch angle guy, and that's what happened to him the last couple of years. So after the trade, the first call we had with Benintendi, I asked about whether or not he had fallen into that launch angle stuff. And he admitted it. He said, yeah, he thought that, you know, I think his phrase was, it was sort of the way the game was going. And so he said, yeah, he added, you know, size. He tried to hit for more power. And he thinks that's where some of the failings in 2019 came from. And this offseason, he went back to what he had been doing. He cut more weight, tried to, you know, not focus on power. He said multiple times just this spring training, you know, he's like, hey, I'm not a big guy. I'm only 5'9". He said, you know, multiple times. And he's talked about, picking the brain of a guy like Whit Merrifield because he feels like they're similar profile guys. Obviously, Whit's a right-handed hitter. But and also, you know, the Royals, you know, Dayton Moore mentioned it at the time of the trade too, is in Kauffman Stadium, they're not looking for him to go out trying to hit home runs. That's not going to work. What they want for him is to use the whole field hit doubles, hit, you know, hit into the gaps, you know, use a guy who can use his speed. That's what they're looking for from him. That sounds like what he wants to do. And they believe that's what they're going to get from him. And, you know, Mike Matheny was thrilled from the time that that trade went down. And he's a guy who's familiar with Benintendi because his son Tate was in the Red Sox organization. So he's known of Benintendi for years now.
So when you look at the Royals, and I feel like I don't think they're going to win the division. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But when I've seen the projections for them, I'm really low numbers. And I feel like, you know, they're better than that. What do you think?
I know that the Pecota had them right around 71 wins. I think that was right before Benintendi trade. I've struggled at what I think a good number is, but I think if I remember it right, 71 was right about, if you took what their win percentage was last year and stretched it out, it's right in that range. I feel like they're better than they were last year. I'm still unsure about some of the pitching, as you could say with any team this year, especially coming off of the pandemic season and the uncertainty about innings and limits and all that. So I do think they're better than that 71. I'm just not sure how it's going to play out with the pitching. The lineup is definitely better. Their bullpen improved a lot last year from the year before. Again, you're stretching that out over more games. And how those young pitchers and how guys like Mike Minor and Danny Duffy can anchor that bullpen, I mean, that starting rotation, because they're the experienced guys with innings under their belt. I think that's where you know, you're going to see how big they can, big a leap they can make. But you're also, the last two full seasons they've had, they were 100 loss seasons. So that's why it's a little, you know, I'm a little hesitant to make big predictions and jumps, because, you know, to go from, you know, 100 losses, and then the shortened season where they were still under 500, to say that now they're going to be a 500 team or over is sort of a big jump. But I do believe they'll be much better than they've been last year, and probably a little bit better than what projections have them.
As someone who's gotten a lot of predictions wrong, I'd say you're doing a smart thing and not putting yourself out on that limb. Lynn, thanks for joining us. And also, thanks for listening. I know you listen to the podcast. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I've been listening. I covered, you know, minor league baseball in lots of places over the years, going back probably almost 15 years now. And so I've listened to the podcast for a long time, just, you know, as I've been following baseball at different levels.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, we got Robert Beretta at Holler at Rob. He says, "Hey, Buster, interesting stat from Dave Schoenfield about current CBA leading to reduction in average player salary. What do you attribute that to? Did the players' union fail to foresee the rise of analytics in front offices? How do they reverse that trend in the CBA?" We get lots of questions about the CBA these days, not surprisingly, but this was just one of several.
No, I think they flat out blew the negotiations. They prioritized a lot of things that didn't necessarily translate into financial value. The owners were really focused on financial value. And I've said this all along, and I'll continue to believe it. I think the more engagement that the two sides have, the better it is for the players. I think they need to, you know, in part to be engaged, to come up with ways to win back some of the financial ground that they've lost. And what happened in those negotiations in 2016, they didn't engage. And I wrote about this. Rob Manfred spoke to the owners. He talked about how he was going to have a plan to lock out the players. He was going to leak out the threat of that. And then he said, they're going to agree to a deal at the end, and we're going to kill them. And that's exactly, and I'm paraphrasing, that's exactly what happened in that deal. They lost so much financial ground with that deal.
Next up, Justin Simmons at Justin Lance Sim 1. He writes in, "Hey, Buster, did you really leave Dave Winfield out of the conversation on greatest athletes in Major League Baseball history? The man was taken in 3 professional drafts, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL.
Yeah, it was a tremendous omission and a huge mistake. And I'm the last person in the world who should make that omission, because the NFL team that drafted him, the Vikings, my favorite team. And that should have been top of mind for me. Justin, guilty. I'm not worthy. Anything you want to fill in there, absolutely true.
And just blame it on Dave. That's what I would do. Last one for today. Andy Feld at Felt Andy writes in, "Buster, I am a Dodgers fan and can cite multiple times that the 3-batter minimum was advantageous to them winning the World Series. Do you like the rule, and is there statistical analysis yet that shows any difference in runs scored because of the new rule?"
Nah, I think the sample size is so small. I mean, besides the fact that it's only been one season, but also it's just 60 games. I do think the Dodgers have an advantage. And let's face it, if you have relievers who are good against right-handers and left-handers, the three-batter minimum could turn out to be a strength. I like the rule a lot because I was just, in previous years, I'd getting so sick of the whole thing happening where you get to the seventh inning and all of a sudden you see five pitchers for five batters. That was colossally boring to me. So I like the three-batter minimum.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jesse, to Sarah, to Lynn, Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.